Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. This is Doug Turvey, the official town crier for the Township of Zora and the Town of Ingersoll. You are listening to CKMS 102.7. This I hereby proclaim, God save the Queen.
Hi, this is Mary Walton, and this is CKMS Radio Waterloo, 102.7 and on the Rogers Digital Network at 946.
Farming can be a tough business, one that sometimes takes its toll on farmers and their families when mental health struggles become too much to bear. I know farmers are some of the toughest people out there, but they tend to hold their troubles close to the chest. Sometimes it means it's harder to reach out for help. We want to help address the stigma that still surrounds mental health and encourage people to talk about it. It takes courage. Please know that help is out there, and it's always okay to ask for help.
Ontario's rural communities and agri-food sector hold tremendous promise for driving economic growth for the entire province and all Ontarians. By distributing the economic development throughout the province, with infrastructure investment in roads, bridges, schools, broadband, energy, and healthcare, we can create new jobs in thriving communities, ease the strain on big city issues of transportation and housing, and most importantly, we can secure a sustainable food system that every Ontarian depends on. A thriving rural economy can spearhead growth for the entire province. Find out more at producingprosperity.ca.
Okay, folks, it's the Agriculture Show, and just thanks so much for tuning in today. I see Jeff Poole has joined us on our Facebook Live video page. You're welcome to everybody who posts a question. We can actually answer what our favorite color is if we have to, can't we, Richard?
Indeed we can.
All right. So Richard Giles is our...
Giles
is our guest today, and it just happened, Stance, that we'll talk about how he's actually here as well, but we got in conversation, and he's really got something really cool he's working on as part of his study at UOW, and that is about cultured meat products, I guess he called that. Would that be accurate to call it?
Yeah, cultured meat's the best label I would use. I'll get into the whole labeling issue in a minute, but yeah, best label for the moment.
Okay, let's do that. Then what we're going to do, first of all, as you know, folks, with our agriculture show here in CKMS, we like to play music. And Richard's brought along some great tunes. And I'd invite you, sir, please, if you're so kind, this first... Tell us about this first one and why you like it. Floral Shop. What's that band name there?
The name there is Floral Shop, or that's the album that it comes from, excuse me. The artist name is Macintosh Plus, and this was the first album in the vaporwave genre that got really big on the internet there for quite a while.
Okay.
This song's off the vinyl pressing of it. You have to find kind of bootleg copies online in order to get this song specifically. Mm-hmm. I fear I don't know what the symbols exactly stand for, but it's known as Side B4. Just some very interesting instrumentation. Saxophone and layering in here, yeah. Which is why it's always appealed to me. It's more of a late night song, but I figure, yeah. Hey, you know what? Yeah. I play it all the time, and it's short ones, so might as well.
And by chance, are you a concert goer? Do you like to get out on some regular basis, see new music, old music?
I would like to try, but because I grew up in a rural area, like a really small town, and you know, Toronto was 2 hours away, it was really hard to make it to concerts. The closest place was this little concert hall about 40 minutes where I was from, and it tended to normally have comedians coming through, which wasn't a bad thing, but rarely did we really get much in the way of musical acts that took my interest. So I'm hoping at some point down the line I'll be able get to more concerts and finally get into that a little bit.
Okay, that's good to hear. On music, with lots of local great artists and lots of stuff going on out there. Let's play the song, Richard. We'll come back, folks, and stay locked in. We'll see you in a short bit. Here's a song by Richard, and we'll see you shortly. Go ahead. Thank you.
Hi, this is Steve Ashton from Reaven Company. This is CKMS Radio Waterloo. We are live streaming on the FM band at 102.7, on the Rogers Digital Network at 946, and on the internet at radiowaterloo.ca. And don't forget, Facebook Live video. Catch podcasts of past shows and visit our supporters page at radiowaterloo.ca. Community radio broadcasts and promotes local news and entertainment through spoken word and music. You're listening to The Agricultural Show. The Agricultural Show is supported by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Agriculture Show is made possible by community radio. The WFA represents the farmer producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the Waterloo region. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the policy needs of society.
I'm Owen Roberts from the GMOs. You are listening to Community Radio, CKMS, Radio Waterloo. We are live streaming on the FM band at 102.7, or on the Rogers Digital Network at 946, or on the internet at soundfm.ca. Community Radio broadcasts and promotes local news and entertainment through the spoken word and music.
And thanks for listening in today, folks. It's the Agriculture Show. It's your host, Jeff Steger. And today in studio is Richard Giles. I keep saying Giles.
Yep.
Okay, I got it right. That's a great song selection there. That was just wonderful.
Why, thank you.
And we're going to have our usual procedure for a show. We're going to get to know our guest, let him play some more music, then we're going to talk about what he does, and away we go. So first of all, Mr. Giles, it doesn't come up. When you sit down for Christmas dinner at your house with your family, how many people are around that table? Tell us about you and your family.
How many people are around that table? It's really just my mom and my dad, just because a lot of my dad's family is down in South Carolina, so they're deep in South there. And my mom's side is just a little bit more, you know, spread out, things like that. So it's relatively small that way.
Yeah. Any? Do you have any Christmas traditions? Is that when you go up, maybe cut down the family Christmas tree for that day, or just you have a big cook-off and who can make the best stuffing for the tree? I don't know.
Not quite, just because in terms of a Christmas tree, we do animal rescue, and so we have a number of cats. Okay. And, yeah, they tend to make the Christmas tree a little bit of a target that way. So we don't want to have it going on the floor and the lights going everywhere. So we keep just kind of a very small little, you know, light set up, and mainly just make sure that we're kind of celebrating each other, making sure that, you know, we're reminding family of what's important. And that's pretty much, we try to keep it low key that way.
And do you call yourself a country kid or a city kid?
I would definitely say country kid, despite the fact that I've been in Waterloo for school now since 2012.
Yes.
I can't be here 7 days a week. I have to go get my fresh air in the countryside. I can kind of go between, but definitely I would say I'm country. I need to be around where the mud is, where, you know, you hear the crickets at night and everything like that. Yeah. You lose that in the city a little bit, even a small one like Waterloo.
And where is home? You're in Southern Ontario here?
Yep. About 40 minutes out from Waterloo between Drayton and Arthur area, kind of middle of nowhere, and my address has me going in between different places. Yeah. So, about 40 minutes out, though.
Very good. So that's good. You've got dual life. You got the bedrock of back to the farm and the countryside, that's a good segue into, I wanted to find out, what is it you're doing in the city of Waterloo? Are you you're employed? I think, you know, you're at university. Go ahead. Tell us about what you do.
Yeah, so I am at university. Technically, I do TA work, so that helps keep me employed that way. What I've been doing basically since 2012 is just going through school. So I did my undergraduate in political science at UW. Yeah. I then jumped over to Herb Street to the Balsillie School of International Affairs for Global Governance, which was still through UW. And now I'm back at UW doing my PhD in Environment, Resources, and Sustainability. So that's the kind of general idea of the work I'm doing.
That's it's actually pretty cool, you know, because over the years, there's become even more and more agriculture kind of environment stuff at the University of Waterloo than there ever has been.
Definitely.
It's made a big step. It's still got a core foundation of math and computer stuff.
Oh, yeah.
engineering. But I just, from the outside, it's just great how much more environmental stuff is. And that it's going to be wonderful getting to our next part of our show, talking about what it is you do up there. So So there you're so you're doing your TA now.
Yep.
And what happens next in your career? What do you want? What are you? Yeah, I guess that's the question for all.
That's the part I have to figure out, and I'm waiting till a little bit closer till my dissertation is done.
Yes.
Or at least I'm in the process of writing it to start kind of getting an idea there, because there's a possibility that a dissertation could be turned into a book. So I may be focusing on that right away first, trying to make sure to get that secured if I do decide to go that route. I do like doing TA work and certainly wouldn't mind teaching, but I do have to kind of figure out if I want to do that for life or not. Yeah. And especially in the current academic space, both of my parents were academics.
Yes.
At a much different time. And admittedly, academia certainly is undergoing some changes. And yet I, you know, my parents raised me in the old school academic sense. Mm. So I can remember when they would tell me about how if you had three commas places in your paper, you flunked. Mm. Like it was that type of environment. And it's much, much different now. And so there's that part of me that's got to figure out if modern academic environment is what I want to navigate or not. Plus, I do assist a couple people on their legal matters. And so there could be also the law school option down the line. Mm. So I'm leaving it for a little bit down the line yet. Eventually, I'll have to figure it out. But I'm thinking about a year or two from now, I'll finally sit down and say, all right, what do I want to actually do for the next little while?
All right. Well, you have certainly lots of tools in the tool shed here with your description of what you're doing and the things you're up to.
Definitely.
So that's pretty cool. You just got me thinking. If I had time for a longer show, it'd be just even talking about that change in the as your parents went through academia and now you, what's important and what's not anymore. That'd be a great topic.
Yeah, actually, I'm working through my dissertation proposal process right now, and part of it would involve some major ethics training. And when I told my folks that, you could see the look on their face as if, you know, wait, that's under ethics training now? So it's, there definitely are a lot of differences. And so trying to map all those changes out, I think, would be a couple episodes worth of material there.
You don't have time for a hobby in the middle of all this. You aren't like doing some curling or rock climbing or something.
I tend to keep my hobby to music archiving, and occasionally when I can play video games, do that. Just, yeah. You know, browse the internet and all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are mainly my hobbies.
Well, we'll get talking about your newest hobby, which I know of, in our next segment. But we're going to play a song first.
Yep.
Let's look at your second selection here and tell us about this one.
So this is by artist No Name. It's called Son 31.
Yep.
I actually played Son 32 during one of the training sessions that we had. She's just dropping a couple of songs this year without really much of a name to them. No Name is an artist out of Chicago. She debuted in 2016 with Telephone, though actually she had been circulating for a while longer with Guest Verses. Everyone was really wanting her to drop an album, and she just took her time with it, dropped a really memorable project. She came back last year with Room 25. Very interesting approach to her rap style. It's not spoken word, but she definitely doesn't try to keep it very stagnant and rigid in terms of how she delivers lyrics and how she flows. And her imagery, her rhymes are always incredibly unique, and she manages to be very powerful at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so she definitely, she has a Bandcamp page, only two albums. It would cost $20 basically to get her entire discography right now.
Yeah.
And it's definitely worth it, because I think she's one of the most interesting voices coming out of rap music right now.
That's good. That's a good promo. We'll get to that. I like your music. You're really up on some of that important background stuff.
Why, thank you.
All right. Switch the on button and we're right back, folks. Just stay locked in. We'll see you in a short bit.
Everything is for you. I'm a terrible sense of humor.
I just love the way you did that.
I'm a pearly gated redemption and casual afternoons. All this money, you know, I'm making my race and against the moon. But I feel pain for profit, and I feel profit watching. Everything is for everything. Rhyming with casualty, and no labels is backing me. But my tickets be selling out, and I'm steady raising my feet. It's another hit from the feet. 110 degrees in a desert heat with a bubble coat turtleneck underneath. Rolling up on the beach, smoking the holy weed, laughing, baking my homie tea, hoping joking is all we need. When I sell pain for profit, now I binge watch Atlanta. No more TV representation from a Kelsey grammar. Let's host the niggas getting checks to work behind the camera. Somebody raise a manna.
Truth be told, I put my heart on my sleeve. Watch you set it on the shelf, now my body got cold. I swore we'd never leave. Had to do it for myself to find my friends. Go get your ass back inside.
Real recognize, real feeling like real proof. Real buddy buddy after the trip to the Cancun. $1 million baby, bet you can get to the hands too. Got a pack of wolves ready to damage a full moon.
The only bitch actually rapping to look like me now. Or me out. Kitty just reimagined a freestyle. Damn flooded niggas still waiting for me to reach out. We shadow boxing government hoping they put the leash down. I sell pain for profit, not propaganda. I know cancer's origins linked to Santa. I know Santa's origins linked to money. Mass production of cattle, a slaughtering for the yummy. These niggas is clever to prison, no better to ghost to the living. We ain't talking about Reggie on Christmas, we almost forget him. What's a casket to a holding cellar for nigga ain't in it? Only reason why I'm steady fading and still independent.
Truth be told, I put my heart on my sleeve. Watch you set it on the shelf, now my body got cold. I swore we'd never leave. Had to do it for myself to find my friends.
Hi, this is Peter Sikanda from the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. This is CKMS Radio Waterloo. We are live streaming on FM band at 102.7 on the Rogers Digital Network at 946, on the internet at radiowaterloo.ca, and on Facebook Live Video. Catch podcasts of the show and visit our supporters page at radiowaterloo.ca. Community Radio Broadcasts promotes local news and entertainment through the spoken word and music. You are listening to The Agriculture Show. The Agriculture Show is supported by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Agriculture Show is made possible by Community Radio. The WFA represents the farmer producers in Waterloo Region. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the policy needs of society.
Hi, you're listening to The Agricultural Show on Sound FM 102.7, CKMS.
All right, boy, that's great to listen to some of my past guests and other visiting people here. I always enjoy some of their, when they very kindly give us a little bit of a promo, so that's good. Richard Giles is our guest today, and we've had a great time so far in our first segment. Great songs, Richard, and we talked a little bit about you're looking at yourself as a country boy rather than a city guy, but you certainly have a lot of things going on, so that's good to hear. And we're going to get more into what is it you do, and we can kind of mash this up, because it's really the cool part that I'm thinking about from an agriculture standpoint is this cultured meat topic. So why, if you'd be so kind, just tell us again, you're at the University of Waterloo, and what you're studying right now.
Okay, so yeah, I'm at UW right now, PhD in the Environment and Resource Sustainability Program. At the moment, I'm working on my dissertation proposal, and it will deal with the topic of cultured meat. Now, dissertations usually double and become much larger kind of analyses. So again, you establish a theoretical framework that's kind of your larger understanding of the topic and the context in which it exists, and then you collect data on the actual subject in and of itself. This focus has stemmed, though, from a lot of work I did for my comprehensive examination on understanding the environmental impacts of meat, so on and so forth, the kind of sustainability issues, so on and so forth. And during that time, what I was really realizing is that there's a growing focus on cultured meat as this quote-unquote potential miracle solution for the problems that are currently stemming from certain, you know, practices in production, so on and so forth. And I got curious as to kind of how it was being talked about, what was being said, and whether or not it really kind of added up. And so this dissertation is not necessarily going to be a full-blown technical analysis because ultimately there's not much to technically analyze right now. I'd have to get, you know, pretty deep access to companies that are keeping things pretty quiet at the moment. But what I think my dissertation will be doing is taking a look at some larger contextual issues and some different theoretical understandings of meat in society, so on and so forth, and trying to understand what role does culture meat play, where does culture meat have its impacts and where is it not, what changes and what stays the same, I guess is the best way to put it.
Good stuff. It just occurred to me that the cool thing about what you're doing is if you tell people what you're doing, I bet you everybody has an opinion, right? It's one of those studies where you can solicit off-the-cuff comments in 30 words or less from someone.
Yep.
So is that – I think that would make it interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, what I'm probably going to be focusing on is mainly policymaker reaction to cultured meat, because that's something that's keeping relatively quiet at the moment. It's at the policy realm outside of the USDA and FDA fight that started happening last year, but who's going to regulate cultured meat? Generally, policymakers are keeping pretty quiet about it right now. Right. You'll see agricultural groups making a lot of noise, you'll see producers making a lot of noise, and you'll see individuals and academics making a lot of noise.
Yep.
Policymakers are sticking away from it right now, though.
Yeah.
And so I'm probably going to be focusing mainly on the global governance realm because they would more than likely be the first to try to issue a lot of support before a national government does, just because, again, national governments have to take care of their producers within their borders,
right.
Whereas global governance entities, a little bit of a different context, and just kind of get a sense on where they're standing professionally and personally on it.
Yeah.
Do they even view it as a legitimate, you know, possibility? Do they not? Is some of the hype, you know, just not there in that realm?
Yeah.
Those are some pretty important questions that have to be answered.
So that's quite a far-reaching group of people to contact. Do you actually contact them to get an opinion, or do you mostly monitor what times, you know, some comment does come out on that stuff? You could get a computer to search a cultured meat, and whenever the UN Food Council says some cultured meat, then poof, it comes to your inbox.
Yeah, so certainly I keep an eye out for anything of those, and if someone makes a comment, then I'll kind of do that. But what I'm thinking for the proposal or for the dissertation in and of itself is to actually sit down and do some in-depth interviews.
Right on.
So because it's one thing to get statements that you can collect generally in the public, but it's another thing to do an interview and kind of ask multiple questions that maybe contradict one another and see how people navigate those answers.
Yeah.
That's a really important part, getting that in-depth analysis, not just kind of the surface level, this is what's been said.
Yeah.
It may or may not be true, but then dive in. How are they understanding it? What perspectives are they coming with? That's a key one. What's their perspective on nature? What's their perspective on the food system in general, the role of governance, so on and so forth? Getting that background can really be an essential part of understanding why what is being said is said at the end of the day.
You know, it's pretty cool. You mentioned the Balsillie School, and it just occurred to me how fortunate I think they were lucky to have not only that, but the Quantum Physics Institute.
Yep.
Both bringing along great speakers. I've enjoyed great speakers up there listening to them, and I missed one just the other month ago, and an Australian was talking about using pulsed lasers to sex semen. And this is like, so I have a farm, and, you know, it was always thought to be good if you could have your cattle offspring be mostly heifers or females.
Yep, definitely.
This would be worth a lot. So I'm just thinking how cool it is that some very relevant stuff, especially what you're doing here and others with agriculture. And dear listeners, if you... I'm just really delighted to have a guy like Richard in today, because we just want to bring the word of agriculture out to the public through the many different voices. And today, Richard's speaking from the point of, as he investigates for his dissertation, the cultured meat products.
Indeed.
You know what we could do is, I think most people, would it suffice to say that most people would probably know what you mean by cultured meat? Do we need to define that anymore?
Yeah, we actually should. So just for those of you who are maybe unaware a little bit, you're probably seeing a lot of different meat product alternatives coming out. So vegan meats and things like that, so on and so forth. But cultured meat specifically is basically when cells are solicited from an animal, usually they basically chop a piece off.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they will do is they'll put it in a culture medium of some sort. That medium gets placed in a bioreactor. The idea is to try to get these cells going and proliferating enough to actually match what an animal would have produced at that point. But then the thing is, you can basically harness cells to make you know, skin and everything like that, and muscle and blood and all that. But what you need to do in order to try to match what meat actually does is you have to get that muscle moving. And so there's electrical and mechanical stimulation options that are possible in order to try to basically get these giant scaffolds of skin and flesh to moving around.
To form into a more of structure.
Exactly, yeah, trying to get it structured. And that is the ultimate goal in many cases. Now, they have managed to do more of that for certain products than others. And so certain products such as, you know, getting a steak is way far off in the future, theoretically. But there's a company that claims that they've managed to produce a $9,000 meatball, which is about the most prominent potential example of anything coming to market at the moment. But yeah, that's what cultured meat ultimately is. It is taking cells from an actual animal, not using plant products to kind of replace what the animal product would be, and trying to do that. And so it brings with it a number of questions about how to actually produce it. And I'll get in, obviously, when you want me to, about the kind of environmental impacts that have been getting promised and whether or not they actually are possible, so on and so forth. But that's the basic production process. And it's basic only in so much as you can describe it. The actual, you know, complicated nature of it is very complicated at day's end. That's the basic summary, though.
So I really appreciate you saying, well, talking about the environmental stuff. Or you definitely need to bring up questions that you think the host should have asked you. We'll do that in the fourth segment. Hopefully we'll get some questions on our Facebook Live, but kind of a summary. But
hopefully,
if I don't ask a question, I'm going to do the question I usually think, but if you have a question you think I should ask you, we'll address that.
Definitely.
Sure. Great. So, that's what a great thing. I'm glad you took time to explain what the cultured meat products is, and you're working on where my policy might go. And that's really important because, you may have the best idea in the whole world, but if people shrug their shoulders, it's lost.
Yeah. And the big thing right now in terms of the policy regulation, the only real tangible approach that has been taken so far is the battle between the USDA and the FDA over who's actually going to regulate cultured meat. Now, one thing that I will say to listeners is that you'll probably know that 2018 was where you were most likely to hear about cultured meat. There was an explosion of coverage that year, and that's because of a couple things. Cargill and Tyson started doing venture capital in the cultured meat products and companies. And so that was big news that kind of your regular meat producer, quote unquote, is starting to look at cultured meat as a potential. Now, their actual investments are still pretty small at the end of the day. It's a venture capital fund, so it's not all that big a deal.
Okay.
But it still symbolically stood for a lot. And so at that same time, the FDA and the USDA started saying, all right, which one of us is actually going to regulate this product and how do you regulate it? Does it fall under the Drug Administration? Do you have alterations to the actual composition? Mm-hmm. So on and so forth. Is this just FDA stuff? So they've agreed to joint regulation. Now, the big question is what that's actually going to look like. Is it going to be the same type of disaster that cloning regulation was back in the late 90s?
Good point.
There are a lot of questions that way. Officials from both sides claim that they've been getting ready for this battle for a long time, but the actual hearings themselves seem to indicate, that was pretty up in the air. So that's why you've probably been hearing a lot more about cultured meat is that in 2018, a number of companies started saying we're going to be a few years away from market, even though nothing can be produced for under $5,000 yet. Mm-hmm. That's very key. In fact, actually, my dad sent me a video of some company that's claiming to do cultured beef out of grass. Now, I need to watch the full video yet, and probably has a lot of additives in it, but it costs about $20,000 to produce a very small bit. So at the moment, nothing's really all that tangible in terms of actually coming to the forefront and being ready for market right away.
Yeah.
There are some theoretical examples there, but yeah, that's why things started really exploding in coverage last year.
So for my own clarification, when did you start getting interested in this? About 2 years ago?
I've been doing research on meat since 2016 now.
Okay, because I know last year, as in concert with what you said, I noticed I'd like to watch PBS and some of the other shows, and in fact, they did have a lot more about food in general and cultured meat products.
Oh, yeah. There was a huge explosion. In fact, I can break down the numbers probably in just a moment.
But that's interesting. So 2016 was probably when you first thought, hey, let's try this out. And now this is 2019, and 2018 was this kind of... I think you're right. It really hit the mainstream.
Really hit the mainstream. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it was completely exempt from the mainstream. 2008 saw PETA putting out about, $1 million to try to get a cultured meat product going, and that's also where we started seeing some first proof of concepts. And then 2013, Beyond Meat, which, as the record is reporting today, could be valued at $1.2 billion. They did this event where they introduced their burger. Now, it was funded by Google's co-founder, Sergey Brin, and it was, you know, done this way. We had a professional chef and everything like that, and a journalist managed to sneak a taste. One journalist managed to jump over and sneak a taste. But it was about a $300,000 proof of concept, basically. Right. And so there was a jump in coverage then. It kind of went back into the darkness a little bit there. And then 2018, again, when we started seeing all these capital investments, that's where, yeah, it really became kind of at the forefront of the public mind. Yeah. But what I will say, though, is that the overall public reaction to it has been just about the same throughout the years. Because even back in 2009, 2010, some researchers started saying, hey, would you eat this? How do you react to it? And generally, a lot of people would say, I'll try it. I don't want to consume it full time, though, without a bunch of questions being answered.
Sure.
And a good 10 years later, pretty much the same story all around.
So anybody else at the University of Waterloo doing what you're doing? Do you have other, maybe people in the University of Toronto? How big is, there's got to be a bunch of other people investigating is the wrong word, but just doing what you're doing with Culture Meat Pie. Do you have some of the people you can bounce ideas off of? Or?
Personally, I don't have anyone right kind of in my department. I believe that there is one other professor there, Stephen Quilley, I think, who's working on some stuff. Yeah. But it's much different from what I'm doing. We have much different approaches and perspectives. What I actually found, though, the past few months ago, I had to do a discourse review on cultured meat just to kind of get a sense of what was going on.
Right.
And what I found in terms of academic research is that you have a lot of individuals who kind of do a couple papers on it. There's only really a few people who are doing full-time research, though.
Okay.
And some of them are deeply invested in the cultured meat industry in and of itself, so partiality can be quite tough. So Mark Post, who has done the most research on cultured meat and was the one getting funding by Maastricht University in the Netherlands to really come forward with Beyond Meat, he's got his investment in Beyond Meat. You know, again, he's at the forefront of that company. He is there's a lot of big money flowing through. And so trying to collaborate there as someone who's trying to maintain somewhat of an outside perspective on cultured meat, you start running into some difficulties a little bit about where could potential biases lie and where do, you know, inappropriate power relations lie. And so at the end of the day, I actually like taking kind of a solo approach to it just because for some people, there could be a lot of passion really getting invested in this. And because of all these differing perspectives on whether or not it's a techno miracle or, you know, the end of the world potentially, depending on who you ask, sometimes it's best to actually do the lone wolf thing for a little bit and say, all right, here's where I think we're at. And, you know, these are all the other different perspectives that you can go look at.
Yeah.
So I definitely will send people in different directions. But in terms of actually bouncing ideas, it's still a really incohesive research body right now. There's still so many disparate kind of fields that are looking at it saying, okay, this might affect us in one way or another. There's not necessarily the same as you might get with climate change,
right,
where you jump in and there are like 18 million people working on it and you could just always be working with them. Cultured meat's not quite there yet.
Not there yet, but in time. And like a lot of these, this whole CRISPR stuff, I'm not too sure. I don't think the discussion's done on CRISPR technology yet either.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. Well, this is super. We're going to play another song here, Richard, because we're going to come back and we've got a couple more segments to go here. And we're just having, this is way too much fun for a, you know, we're doing pretty good for time-wise. Sometimes I got to watch my clock, as you know, how your time is going. We have time to do stuff.
Indeed.
Okay, let's play another song. We're ready.
Okay.
And you got down here?
Yep. This one is by Bilal. It features Kendrick Lamar. It's called Money Over Love. It's off his In Another Life album. Came out a few years ago. Bilal's a wonderful singer. Kendrick Lamar, obviously, is a rapper who's managed to do a lot of big things. Mm-hmm. His albums Good Kid, Mad City, and To Pimp a Butterfly from 2012 and 2015 are very important albums of this decade. And so this was a great collaboration, you know, fun little joint. Just, you know, it's got a good beat. And then Kendrick Lamar comes in with his verse, just, you know, a lot of passion and energy there. It's definitely something I like going back to. Bilal's album In Another Life was pretty low key. It's the type of thing that you can overlook pretty quickly, but then when you actually go back and listen to it, you remember, hey, this is a really good album. So
these guys, are they American?
Are American.
American? Okay.
Good. Yep.
All right, go ahead. We'll play it and we'll be right back, folks.
Sounds good.
Never again.
Enders from the Ontario Farmland Trust. We are live streaming on the FM band at 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo, on the Rogers Digital Network at 946, and on the internet at radiowaterloo.ca. Catch podcasts of past shows and visit our supporters page at radiowaterloo.ca. Community radio broadcasts and promotes local news and entertainment through the spoken word and music. You are listening to The Agriculture Show. The Agriculture Show is supported by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Agriculture Show is made possible by Community Radio. The WFA represents the farmer producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the policy needs of society.
Hello, this is the Tugboat of the Tugboat.ca. Community Radio CKMS is the voice of the people, by the people. I support CKMS 102.7 RadioWaterloo.ca because it's the real deal.
And we are the real deal, folks, and thanks for tuning in today.
Hi.
We're at the Agriculture Show here in CKMS, and Richard Giles is our guest today, and we've just been motoring right along with all kinds of cool stuff. Great music, Richard.
Thank you.
So much fun. You know what? What we better do first of all? I ask you what you do. You want just to say a few words about this latest? I asked you about a hobby as well, and what do you do? Let's talk about this new show you've got going on here at CKMS Radio. Let's do that before we forget.
So every Friday at midnight, so basically on Thursday nights, because I know we tend not to do that divide properly, I host the cleanup hour. I call myself Mop Head on that program. It's just an hour-long program where I very briefly cover a news story. So last week I covered what happened with MySpace's archives getting deleted and the effort to try to recover all of those files. And then I play a mix, sometimes related to the news story, sometimes not. Basically, I call it the cleanup hour because, you know, we're starting to get to the end of the week there. You know, we need to kind of get organized before we enter the weekend, before we wrap things up. And I think music, regardless of the actual subject or the themes of it, can be an important way to kind of get organized, get things cleaned up. And, you know, even sometimes if it's a messy mix, that can help you just remember, you know, how organized you are. So
they'll tune into that, folks. Check that out. It's a great show. And maybe in time, Richard, you'll have a repository for all that, those sound files and whatever else you need to do. Over time, you can get that going. So don't forget, folks, check that out. And Richard's got a great show here at CKMS. And we're very proud here at CKMS to have all kinds of really great shows and this is just one of them. So let's get back to our agriculture show here today. As you know, we talked about Richard, you know, whether he's Christmas tradition, whether he likes to cut down trees or not, and we talked about what he does at the university, and so this part of the show I like to ask, I guess. So, Richard, what do you know about agriculture? Like, if some random guy walked in the door here today and he said, hey, you two guys sitting there with your caps on, what do you guys know about agriculture? What would you tell them?
What do I know about agriculture is, I'm going to say this. I come from it, I come at it from a very different perspective, because my parents and I, it's a vegan household. We're an animal rescue farm. And when you look at where we are, to one side of us is a Mennonite farm, yep. Okay, small Mennonite operation, and to another is an absolutely massive pig farming operation. Mm. So agriculture cannot be considered one monolithic entity, even in, you know, a region, even in a national place. There's a lot of this talk about, you know, oh, Canadian agriculture, or, you know, agriculture overseas or whatnot, but even within the same concession, it's incredibly diverse. And so one of the things everyone has to take into account is, when you talk about agriculture, you may be talking about two very different things, mm-hmm. depending on how people define agriculture, what they view as being important to it. Agriculture is a lot of tough work. It is a lot of, you know, praying, even if you don't have faith, it's, you know, it's about praying. Yeah. You're praying for the rain to be right. You know, you're praying that summer won't dry things out too badly. You won't be in drought mode. It's one of those things where you're trying to balance a very complicated world. And so when I deal with policy, and when, you know, I talk about different changes that need to be made environmentally, so on and so forth, what I often find is that, because of the perspective I come with, I can feel very much at ease, or not at ease, at right. the table when yeah. it's being discussed, because you have a lot of people working on agricultural policy who their actual background on agriculture can be a little questionable. And even then, you know, you have differences between those, like, who's more the farmer in regards to the situation I talked about, the Mennonites next door, or those who had the big pig farm operation that's gone completely technical,
yep.
and it's all pretty much digital and robots now. Which one is considered, you know, closer to agriculture, closer to farming? So even in that, you can have a lot of tension there. And when you get all of these different hands in who are trying to do a ton of different things at once without ever necessarily having actually worked the soil, without ever actually having, you know, tried to do any of that,
right.
it's, you can understand why agriculture is such a contentious battleground upon which nobody really seems to reach resolutions all that often. We're still dealing with, you know, trade problems and issues like that from the 50s and 60s. and, you know, subsidy issues. The subsidy debates are still ongoing. They're still raging.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think they'll be raging well after I pass away, you know, wherever down the line.
Yeah.
It's that type of thing. So what I say to people about agriculture is, it's incredibly complicated to a degree in which you have to understand how you think about agriculture, and then be ready for your expectation to completely shatter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to try to figure out, okay, how do I work with that from there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point, because it's consistent with the fact that less and less people are actually involved with day-to-day agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nobody's fault per se. It just was ordinarily, if it's something part of your routine, you're much more aware of what's going on. But if it's not part of your routine anymore, lots of families in town, I'll backtrack. At one time, people in town said they always had an aunt or an uncle out in the country.
Yep.
And now, lots of people in town say, I don't know anybody. I even know a farmer. I could do it by the stereotype of a farmer at times, but I don't know what a farmer is. This is like your neighbor. One's presumably got his bib coveralls on, and the other guy, well, he probably does too. I shouldn't put that. But they have different ways of going about doing this.
The bib coveralls are the uniting factor, it
right.
seems.
I think we're on to something. We better say the universal farm get up. Anybody's got those, as we'll call it, part of the crew.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I sometimes I'd like to ask guests like yourself about agriculture. You know, have they ever had that aha moment where you saw someone's lights go on, they've understood something? My goodness, Richard, you are certainly at the forefront of that. Have you explained something to someone that you thought that you could tell, or they'd express that, thank you for saying that, because now I can kind of connect some dots here?
That happens quite a bit. And what I would kind of say, though, is that with how agriculture's become so disconnected from pretty much everything else,
yeah.
those aha moments are very rapid.
Yes.
And they occur often because, you know, even explaining just what we understand as kind of basic agricultural stuff, so how you do hay.
Yeah.
So, you know, the cutting, the raking, and the baling process, that alone becomes a eureka moment for the fact that, you know, for some it can take a long time depending on your tractor size and,
that's,
you know,
right,
how many hands you have on deck and everything like that, and how expensive it could be if you have to pay out and hire out elsewhere. Even then you see those kind of aha and eureka moments of, hey, you know, it makes a little bit of sense now. So it's one of those things where they occur rapidly just because of how disconnected people have become from agriculture, I think.
No, that's just gold. I pretty appreciate you saying that. I just hoping our urban listeners can hear what Richard's saying, that there's lots going on behind the scene. Take time and talk to these different people involved in this stuff. We know, the farm community knows that 95% of our urban listeners, they just really honestly want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
They're not at the stage where they're launching Molotov cocktails, you know, or they're, you know, radicalized. But hopefully with shows like this, where we get people speaking about agriculture that our good listeners will hear, there's a lot more in behind. There's real people involved. And as Richard goes about his career in academia at the moment, that has some really, well, of course, from my perspective, just some really great overlap with agriculture, which is what we're trying to do today.
Yeah, definitely. And your point about, you know, kind of real people being involved and the relationship between academia, I think, becomes a really important point. Because with the research that I do on the environmental impacts, obviously one of the things we hear regarding meat production especially, mm-hmm, is the need to reduce consumption. And yet, something that I've called out very often in these proposals, and people always say to me, why are you calling out, you know, the reduced consumption proposal despite your vegan background, everything like that?
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, if you look at these plans, they're not plans. You have people saying we need to reduce consumption upwards of 90% with absolutely no idea what to do for farmers who actually get affected.
Yeah.
What does this mean for those who don't have the demand
I'm
anymore?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'll just volunteer quickly that as farmers, like, we're not so... we're just interested in a person being able to make a living, raise their family, take a vacation, and put their kids through school.
Yeah.
It's not important. Whatever society wants, farmers can do it.
Yeah.
Just say what it is and what your goals are, and this is what it costs.
But also there needs to be support from governments and institutions,
yes,
to make sure the transitions can happen. And that's one of the key things. When I see these recommendations that say people need to reduce their consumption,
yeah,
I, in theory, agree. But then in practice, that doesn't actually produce the results that you think, because then that's going to affect agriculture a lot more,
mm-hmm,
a lot more at the end of the day. And if you have no plan for farmers, why on earth should they really be engaging with you in any serious sense if,
mm-hmm,
you're showing that you're not necessarily caring for that transition? So yeah, part of trying to understand the real experience is that if someone's in complete denial about all the issues of agriculture and saying, oh, I'm just doing my thing, that's, you know, totally fine,
yeah,
there's a problem there. But that doesn't negate the need to still talk and say, okay, what, you know, what do you both want from the system, and what would you want from a theoretical kind of changed system? And that's where a lot of my interest came with cultured meat too, because I'm seeing this push for kind of this techno-miracle. If we look at the United Nations kind of ruling that, hey, we've got 12 years before climate change fully kicks in,
right,
more and more people are going to be looking at the environmental impacts of this massive meat production system we have and are going to say, all right, we need a big change. We need a big system. And so they're looking at cultured meat. But one of the big problems is, what happens to those former producers who don't get any type of transition there?
Yeah.
If you're not actually letting them into the production process, which is unlikely to happen because, again, you have lab controls and everything like that, it would be a much different set of producers coming in. What does that actually mean for those who have those large barns that were facilitated? Do you try to transition them into something else in terms of production? Do you set up a program for that? Most people aren't thinking like that. And it's frightening that that's kind of what's going on in the academic and policy realms, that those thoughts aren't really occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that kind of doesn't really solicit a great response. And so, yeah, it's important to have shows like these and to have these types,
yeah,
of discussions, because even if, you know, I'm saying something like, hey, I think there needs to be a major change in what you do, what I want to say, though, and what I want to make clear to kind of everybody in that is that that doesn't necessarily mean to shoulder all of the loss of it.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a much larger effort to try to figure out how do we actually make change. And you're quite right in saying that farmers have to adapt a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We have to adapt. I know culturally and socially we might try to maintain certain institutions and practices throughout time, but we have to adapt. In fact, a lot of farming could be day-to-day adaptation. It could sometimes be hour-to-hour, depending on when the weather changes. So
it does now already. Like, if you had that nice cut, few cut of hay, all of a sudden the rain comes along. Guess what? That was your one time until 2 months later when it comes back again.
Exactly.
And you can't turn back the biology of that crop.
Exactly, yeah. And, like, we're having to adapt on the spot with that. And so it's why we really have to take into account the adaptation potential and just kind of talk much more thoroughly about those types of things.
Well, you make me think of something else. I had a previous guest, now he's a retired researcher for Agriculture Canada, and I see him at a local music venue, and Jim was talking about meat and in terms of climate and so on, the greenhouse gases. So the very simple and incorrect thing about society is, in general, is that grass-fed versus grain-fed. But what they're forgetting is that, you know, things like that taxonomically, corn is a grain, but it's also a grass. So resolving that is, so the point is, arguably, yes, there are parts of production agriculture when it comes to beef where, in fact, they do release a lot of greenhouse gases. But most people don't know that might be just really in the last 6 months of finishing stage. And in fact, green put cattle on grass is actually good for the environment because of the way they pasture and they mob feed and they mix the soil and crap out there. There is a place for grass-fed beef, which is actually great. You don't want to get rid of beef. You don't want to get rid of beef, depending on, you know, without being right or wrong, I'm sure you appreciate there's a lot of nuance to things.
There definitely, it's not a very simple binary. Yes. And now that also then leads into a lot of issues, though, regarding if you try to develop a holistic and interconnected view of these systems, you know, water use and, you know, the ability to kind of hit certain demands, so on and so forth.
Right.
So, for example, there was a chapter in a book called The Meat Crisis that talked about how if you were to try to move all the demand for beef over to a grass-fed system, most of these farms can only manage about 500 cattle per per lot. And that's, you know, with heavy crop rotation and things like that. Now, do you have any farm hands that you have? Like, do you have paid labor that way?
Not no more. My operation is way less. I'm retiring out of the business, so I don't have a big herd of cattle anymore. But go ahead with what you're saying.
Well, yeah. And so if you don't have kind of many people to access in terms of that, you know how tough it could be to move and herd cattle.
Oh, I see what you're getting.
And so you have this issue where you would need more paid labor that doesn't seem to be there anymore.
Right.
And you would need to make sure that you have the space and the time and everything like that. So even a system like that where you can make the sale on certain points about, you know, the potential benefits, you then have the question of whether or not it could actually functionally be feasible.
True.
And then with urban land space encroachment, that makes it even more difficult because urbanites tend to get the preference for space that they want. So then therefore you're usually having to make use of worse land that doesn't quite have the same, you know, health True. Benefits and everything like that. And so you're right about nuance, and it tends to be – it's like going down a rabbit hole, I fear. And you have to kind of sometimes pick a certain point to say, all right, we have to stop here and try to make, you know, a certain choice that way. But the further and further you go down the rabbit hole, the more and more complicated everything gets, especially when you try interconnecting a lot of things.
Yeah.
And with, you know, if we continue to increase consumption – and so, again, it's estimated that we'll hit 465 million tons around the world of meat demand by 2050.
Mm-hmm.
The number of animals that goes into that production, the amount of water getting used, especially in spaces now where, you know, we're seeing aquifers getting drained up, we're seeing rivers and oceans getting drained, or, you know, rivers and lakes getting drained up.
Yeah.
All these different conflicting questions really come into play and make it clear that we are facing a very desperate situation coming down the pipeline on all realms. Mm-hmm. And so it's a matter of trying to envision a very different system, but one that doesn't necessarily toss everyone to the curb in terms of producers, especially trying to figure out how do we actually make a new system of demand supply that is much more beneficial to, you know, to Earth, to ourselves, so on and so forth.
Well, I hope it all works out. I mean, that's it. I think you hit right on the numbers there, and I'm just having a lot of fun talking about these things, Richard, as a farmer, and just really glad to hear that you're investigating some of this stuff, and you appreciate some of the little nuance, we call it detail, and unforeseen circumstances, things like that.
Definitely.
So we're having this. I'm having a lot of fun doing the discussion, but we're also having a lot of fun playing some music. So I'm going to invite you, just if you'd be so kind, as to cue up your next song. And Nipsey Hussle, he just passed away, right?
Yes, he just passed away. But we actually have one song beforehand.
Oh, that's right.
And then
I'll
get into the Nipsey Hussle.
Oh my goodness!
It's all good. This is De La Soul and Snoop Dogg. Song called "Pain" off and the Anonymous Nobody, De La Soul's most recent album. Both of these, De La as a group and Snoop Dogg as an individual artist, have been going at it for a long time. They've been doing this music thing for a good while now.
Snoop Dogg, I recognize that name.
Yep. this is a rather funky and groovy collaboration that came off an album that's pretty decent, but this one especially was a highlight. It was good to finally see these kind of legends in rap music working together, and it definitely makes for a very enjoyable track.
All right.
So we are going to jump in.
Go ahead.
It all on my shoulders and give it my all like heavy lifting. No game without tears and sweat. They claim blue skies with white clouds steady drifting. When pain come to get you and hit you like flow, better times will pick you. Do what you gotta do to earn focus in the stormy weather. Come out the tunnel to the light saying
pain will make it better. Pain gon' make it better. thing.
Okay. This is Richard Giles. You are tuned in to the Agriculture Show here on CKMS 102.7. Make sure to tune in for all of your important agriculture-related discussion Tuesdays from 12 to 2.
Perfect. Thanks for doing that.
Not a problem.
You know, you're going to be in the Agriculture Show for, like, ever now.
Perfect.
So Richard's been in the studio. We had a lot of fun. We have covered all kinds of really cool stuff. Not only some great music, what that last one was. We've done the usual stuff. We talked about Richard, what he does, and he does have Christmas. And he's working hard up there at the university with a very current topic about agriculture, which is cultured meat.
Yep.
And then we talked about, boy, he had some good words of advice there on what you tell someone, like a random guy walks in, went into agriculture. We talked about nuance to things. We talked about, people have natural curiosity about these things, but they just don't know where to look.
Yep.
Stuff like that. What else did we talk about? What else was your message, agriculture, in 10 words or less? What else did you say? I'm drawing a blank here. I should probably have a notepad. To nuance, and you started out with a great point, and I just mentioned it twice.
Yeah, we mainly were talking about nuance and making sure that everybody defines agriculture differently.
Right. I love that story about the one neighbor is the Mennonite guy, and the other guy is this like big old...
massive operation.
Exactly.
A few farms, utterly massive.
In the scheme of things, they're both farmers.
Yep.
It's just they're going for a different market, responding to consumer demand for those products. Most of us had enjoyed the convenience of agriculture, which is a modern miracle. You go to a store, you spend 10% of your income or 15, and everything is there. You lack for nothing. But it's also true that we have the luxury and privilege of going and finding something that really vibes with us, whether it's maybe a range-fed chicken versus other chickens.
Yeah.
Just, we're so fortunate. You can find any combination that suits you.
What are you looking at? That is what the modern market has kind of created in terms of the system right now.
So that's a quick review of what we talked about already. So this point, if you have any questions, there's two ways we can do it. There's two things we're going to do here. One is, if you're so inclined, you could go to our Facebook Live video and post a comment on there. That's always very welcome. And the second thing we're going to do is because, the host doesn't always get it right, I'm going to invite Richard. Richard, what would you like to talk about that I forgot to ask you about? What would you talk about?
So the first big thing I'm going to talk about is cultured meat in regards to its supposed environmental impacts. Because in 2011, there was a study done by Hannah Altoun-Mizzo and M. Just Teixeira de Matos, and they published a paper titled Environmental Impacts of Cultured Meat Production.
Okay.
Now, this paper used a life cycle analysis to evaluate a theoretical large-scale production system for cultured meat in Thailand, California, and Spain. And this is all highly theoretical, very theoretical at the time. You didn't even have to be on meat, kind of proof of concept burger. But the paper reached the following conclusion. I will read this quote. In comparison to conventionally produced European meat, cultured meat involves approximately 7 to 45% lower energy use. Only poultry has lower energy use. 78 to 96% lower GHG emissions, 99% lower land use, and 82 to 96% lower water use, depending on the product compared. Despite high uncertainty, it is concluded that the overall environmental impacts of cultured meat are substantially lower than those of conventionally produced meat. This quote got circulated heavily, very heavily. You can find in almost all media articles from 2011 onward, there's a reference made.
Okay. Yep.
And in a lot of academic literature as well, this article was cited. Now, the academic literature was more likely to highlight the uncertainty, but still not too much. The media really did not highlight the uncertainty. Now, because it's theoretical life cycle analysis, it does its thing, but it has had a substantial impact on the discourse. And yet, a couple changes started happening last year that really need to be kind of known about because people aren't going back and updating these articles. So, 2018, Tuo Mizzo writes another article.
Okay, cool.
Let me pull up the name here. The Eco-Friendly Burger is what she calls it. It's a short review of kind of what's going on, and she's still supportive of cultured meat, but the tone starts changing, and that's because she does a small literature review. She reviews a 2014 conference paper and a paper by Carolyn Maddock that used different scenarios in the 2011 publication.
Okay.
And now, the 2014 paper showed higher environmental impact compared to the 2011 estimates. The energy use of cultured beef was even higher than that of conventionally produced beef. GHG emissions were only slightly reduced compared to poultry, and water use was higher for poultry but lower for beef, sheep, and pork meat. And in regards to Maddox's paper, and I'll read the quote here, the results showed 3 times higher energy use compared to previous estimates, which was explained by the steam cleaning, different composition of growth medium, and different bioreactor design. Tuomizo initially assumed a growth medium based on algae. But that's a theoretical growth medium. When compared to conventionally produced livestock meat in the USA, they found higher GHG emissions compared to pork and poultry, but lower emissions compared to beef, whereas land use was substantially lower compared to livestock production. And the authors also highlight that even though cultured meat production uses relatively large quantities of industrial energy, it requires less human edible energy as a form of feed. So we start to see Tuomizo changing the tone here.
Right.
She starts to say, okay, there's some new literature, again, still highly theoretical.
Right.
Because there's not even really an industry. Some companies still don't even have their website done yet. So there's not really an industry that's producing rapidly for one to make a judgment all. But the difference between 2011, 2018, Tuomizo is rather staggering. And then what I'm sure you've seen in some of the agricultural papers is that a very recent study this year, it was published, I think, a couple months ago by Lynch and Pierre Humbert, again, highly theoretical and uncertain, they decided to do a kind of 1,000-year analysis of multiple different types of production systems a long way into the future, where they compare carbon, methane, and nitrogen between cattle production and multiple models of cultured meat. And here's their big quote that needs to be taken into account. Under continuous high global consumption, cultured meat results in less warming than cattle initially, but this gap narrows in the long term, and in some cases, cattle production causes far less warming, as CH4 emissions do not accumulate, unlike CO2. Now, there are questions there because methane is way more potent than carbon in the short term, there are issues there, but we then model a decline in meat consumption to more sustainable levels following high consumption and show that although cattle systems generally result in greater peak warming than cultured meat, the warming effect declines and stabilizes under the new emission rates of cattle systems. While the CO2-based warming from cultured meat persists and accumulates even under reduced consumption, again overtaking cattle production in some scenarios, we conclude that cultured meat is not prima facie climatically superior to cattle. Its relative impact instead depends on the availability of decarbonized energy production generation and the specific production systems that are realized. So the big conclusions that are coming out of this environmental discussion really highlight how we are very unclear on what the production system for cultured meat will actually be, what it will actually look like. So you can have these theoretical models and you can have all this discussion about lower land use, lower environmental impact, so on and so forth, but without any type of concrete model at the moment, all of this is theoretical.
Right.
So I know a lot of farmers have been concerned about cultured meat. What I will say is that don't worry about it for a little while yet, because we first have to try to get a meat, you know, there has to be production that lowers it quite a bit anyway, the cost. And then we have to see what the system actually entails, because the production system may not really be, you know, effective in any way, shape or form. And that realization may hit harder than expected.
It still may happen because some people, we're luxury, have luxury where we want, and some people would find comfort that an animal didn't suffer per se for the same thing. But I just love it. You read that thing. In fact, you know, it may not, depending on how it's done, it may not be better or worse.
And that's the big thing because, I mean, the 2011 paper assumed an algae-based medium system.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that.
But it's really not available yet. Now, there have been inroads in terms of making that medium system available. But what's actually interesting in terms of cultured meat is that animal suffering actually still, for the most part, is needed because the mediums at the moment are based on fetal bovine serum. So at the moment, that even that ethical argument can't really be made. A lot of people were saying, hey, this will reduce animal suffering. But for the moment, it's been on the backs of dead animals so far. And so cultured meat's not even been able to hit that promise. And what really fascinates me, too, in regards to cultured meat is very early on in the literature, where people started to exercise the possibility of, hey, maybe we can have this happen, a lot of people started proposing the possibility of household-based production of cultured meat. So this idea of putting a little lab in your kitchen and just being able to pop in a few numbers and, you know, drop
just like a little, like making sourdough or
exactly.
the old bread maker.
Exactly. Something out of the Jetsons, pretty much.
Right.
And, but then that idea about 2011 starts disappearing and it really doesn't get resurrected again. And I think that's because more and more people are realizing, hey, this would be a massive, massive system that has to go into place. But it, like, it changed a certain thing. Certainly, the one thing I think that everyone can agree on is that land use would substantially lower, because if you're having to produce things in a lab, again, you stuff a lab in a couple of buildings, you could probably produce in an urban center. But that's about really the only thing anyone's really sure on here. In terms of water use, again, that's really going to come down to the electricity generation. So if you can't decarbonize your energy production system.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, water's going to get used. And in fact, it could increase the energy.
Can you imagine if we just ran all coal and heavy bunker fuel to make the electricity?
Raise a good point on that system. It would negate the impacts there. Yeah. So you have to have completely decarbonized energy, which certain countries might be on their way to, but other countries are quite far off on. If you look at the U.S. and, you know, President Trump's still trying to get the coal industry back going again, even though there's not much of one anymore to get back up and generating.
Just offhand, efficiency. How much energy does it take to make animal beef compared to how much energy it takes per pound, the same pound of... that's a dumb question.
You have a good question here. Yeah, now, the big thing is, though, how you actually define energy and how you measure it and all you take into account.
Well, that's a good point. Like, how far back do you go? Like, I mean, it reminds me, greenhouse gas emissions and agriculture is a big villain. But the first studies included all the way through everything. But cars are only taking how much fuel they use. They didn't look at building the damn car.
Yeah. No, when
that's,
you actually
that's totally
take,
unfair, right?
When you take into account actual kind of full-blown life cycle analysis, or at least you take a look at everything that goes in.
Like full cost accounting.
Full cost accounting, pretty much everything increases in terms of its impact detrimentally. Now, agriculture was definitely targeted that way, but it doesn't negate the importance of having to go back and looking at all the factors that go in, especially when you consider increases in demand and just how much more rapidly certain increases in demand are going in comparison to automobiles. I mean, automobile demand is increasing, but vis-a-vis what's happening with agricultural products, you have certain questions there about, you know, just how much. But no, you're quite right about that being an issue. And pretty much when you actually do factor in every factor that goes in, pretty much everything is rapidly increasing in terms of its demand and its impact at the end of the day. And so in terms of cultured meat, the big problem is, though, when trying to do that type of comparison, is that we still don't fully know what's going to go into everything yet. Because, again,
it's still new yet.
There's not even really a theoretical factory model to work on.
I know you and I discussed this somewhat, there's nothing scalable yet.
No.
There's no process that can say, hey, tomorrow we're going to build 10 acres of this factory. There's a lot to do to get that farm.
Yeah, don't buy anyone who says that it's just a few years away. There's so much more left to do to even get it theoretically in place.
Yeah.
And again, by the time it might actually hit that point, that might be when the UN kind of finally says, we're done on the climate change factor, we're all screwed anyway. And so by that point, any of these supposed benefits might not have time to really go into play.
Yeah, I had to go buy a ticket with the Elon Musk, Mars base now.
Yep, have to get up to Mars and try to escape everything. You raise a good point, though, about how to measure energy use, because there are all these questions about, you know, counting the energy of everything that goes into the production, whether or not you should actually count the energy that goes into, you know, what's being expended by the animals when they're, you know, doing stuff that way in terms of methane release, so on and so forth.
So the good news is that can be accommodated before, as long as it's clear in all the studies, this is the set of criteria, we're using the same criteria.
Yeah.
It's so unfair when one person, well, I'm going to use a modified set of accounting principles, and this one says I'm going to use a full cost, and I'm going to, or the other guy said I'm going to select my data.
At the very least, what should occur, I think, is when we see these reports in the media and things like that and summaries online, you can't cherry pick. You have to be very clear as to what the criteria was. It might make your article longer and a little bit more boring to read, but it's actually really definitely essential that you say, this was the criteria they used. It is atypical, but they did that for these reasons. Yep. Because as someone in academia, I do have to defend that sometimes you need different criteria to try to map out all the possibilities.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. So sometimes it's important to use a modified accounting in case what's there doesn't account for something that you know is a critical issue.
Yeah,
so you have to have that. But if you make it clear, you also, I think, those who cover your work owe you that kind of coverage as well. And there needs to be a more clear-cut relationship between the researcher and those who report on the research and saying, okay, I've made this study for this reason. please make sure that you explain to people when you do the summary, because again, not everyone can access academic papers, but far more people can access the reports you get in a newspaper or on CNN or something like that. And that's when it becomes really essential that you don't just cherry pick the best parts of it. You also say, this is the process that they used. It's modified. They modified it for a reason. So now you kind of know, and you can make your judgment from there. And that's something that hasn't really happened though in the agricultural debate. A lot of people have taken these different quotes without necessarily saying, this is what they did, this is what's missing from it, but I still am citing it because A, B, and C.
Maybe it ties back to one of our original comments you and I just had, was so many people don't even know where to begin in agriculture. They have no idea they got to cut the hay.
Yep.
it's really hard to get people to talk about, even understand this idea of common metrics for these things,
right? Yep.
When they don't understand what the basic metric of something, what that means.
Yeah. And I mean, you get into a difficult debate too of trying to figure out what people's obligations are to kind of know these things or not. Yeah. Where should they even look? Who should be providing that information?
But I really appreciate what you're saying. Academia, you just go down all different paths to see which one is fruitful, and then go back and try to standardize it. But at the very beginning, it's crucial. Just write down whatever the hell you think.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
You have to kind of know, there will always be things too, with any theoretical model that becomes standardized, it tends that you find that there's something that's missing, or there's something that you need to add to it to get a fuller understanding of your topic area and understanding the interconnections between issues. So it's one of those frustrating things where standardized models are important, but they're not the end-all be-all. And so sometimes the best thing to do is to really justify why you are adding on to it. And it's better to add on than to take away. So taking away part of a standardized model of research, you don't quite want to do that. What you want to be doing is really adding on and saying, this is why I have added things. If you need to take away, explain that too. But
yeah. Okay. Good stuff. Holy moly, man. This is awesome. Wait, we're doing really good. This is great. Okay. We got one more thing to do yet for our interview part of our show that we're doing. So we want to play another song, at least one more song. Now, which one, if you had to play one last one, which one would you play?
If I had to play one last one, I will give it to Nipsey Hussle, just because I have been, trying to pay homage to him after his unfortunate murder on March 31st.
Okay.
This song is called Smoking With My Stylist. It's about only 2 minutes long. It was released as a promotional track for his mixtape Crenshaw in 2013. Now, what I'll say about Nipsey Hussle is that he had a very fascinating approach to the business model for a long time. He was independent. He owned all the masters to his music.
Yeah. Yep.
And what he did was this proud to pay system for two of his mixtapes. And so what he did was he put them out for free, okay, which was the thing in rap at the time. You put out mixtapes for free.
Mm-hmm.
But then what he said is, okay, I'm going to print up 100 CDs. Pay me $100 for a CD. He did that for Crenshaw. They all sold out in a day.
Yeah.
And so then for mailbox money, he took it a step further and say, I'm going to print out 100 CDs and you can pay them for 1,000. And people did that. And it was this fascinating model that I think people have to make much more use of.
Yeah.
But this track specifically was not on the album. It was just released to kind of do some promotional things. And yeah, I'm going to play it here today because I didn't get it in my mix that I dedicated to Nipsey Hussle a couple weeks ago. Rest in peace, Nipsey Hussle. We will get into it.
Just one moment here. Let's just quickly talk about your last choice. Don't forget around to it. Just who's Shintaro Sakamoto?
Yeah, Shintaro Sakamoto. The song there, if we get to it, is called Never Liked You But Still Nostalgic. It's off his 2014 album, Let's Dance Raw. Shintaro Sakamoto, I can't remember what band he was in, but he took a solo career, and I discovered him in 2012 or 2013. When I picked up a copy of Wax Poetics, it's a magazine that used to be on sale when Chapters there on Kane Street, just near Wholesale Club, was still there and still sold the magazine. And anyway, he had this album called How to Live with a Phantom, and I just really liked the aesthetic of the cover art, and so I decided to check it out. And I think the best way to describe him is that he goes back to the sounds of kind of war from back in the day, and things like that. He's got funk and groove to it. But this album was interesting because he started using some more instruments kind of from Hawaii, and it was an interesting mix, and so hopefully we'll get time to play that record as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, maybe we can throw it into the show before we go off the air.
Definitely.
Try to get on the podcast. So let's do this first. Let's do this one. Nipsey Hussle, and just go right ahead there. We'll play
perfect.
That kind.
Initials on my wallets, smoking with my stylus. Custom German plates on all my cars, cause bitch, I'm ballin'. all in burning crosses, was royalty regardless. Honestly, I'm honored just to represent the progress. Distant as I seem to you, I know what I mean to you. Martin Luther King Jr., hustle, let me dream through you. When I told my scheme to him, told me that I seem stupid. Empty engines need fueling, yeah, I was like my theme music. Now I keep them links Cuban. Money talk, I speak flowing. Everybody buying roadies, you can ask my team's Jonah. Life is but a dream to us, life is why they need music. Got them wrapped around the corner, looking like Supreme throw it. Cause when you cook it right, the fiends use it. Come take a look at life, how we view it. You gotta start off in a cheap Buick, and then book a flight and seat to it. That's first class, my first pass. Big shit, nigga, like when birds pass. 7 grams, I got to a bird fast. And Brian Hurst's staff start busting on my church pass. DOA, you gon' be okay. That's what my granny used to say, but I ain't see a way. Sitting in the county jail, I pray I see today. Most successful nigga got an S up on his face. Fuck the world, fuck the world. They hate a young nigga that can fuck your girl. They hate a real nigga when he touch a meal. Hate you if you fake, but hate you more if you real.
Good, that didn't take, that's a 2-minute song, eh?
Yep.
Okay, well, maybe we can do something with this last one. We'll probably play it out when we call her a day here. First things first. This is the last segment, and I have one question for our guest, and I'll ask Richard this question. Richard, we've been here talking away and what you're doing and where you came from, what you're doing. Tell us, if you'd be so kind, what are you doing in the next 2 hours, and 2 days, and 2 weeks, and 2 months, 2 years, and 20 years if you want.
I don't know about 20 years yet. We got to see what happens with climate change first. But okay. Yeah, in terms of 2 hours, I will be taking off out of here. I got to get some more academic stuff done today.
All right.
Yeah, I've got feedback on my proposal to look at and start working with. So that's the next 2 hours. In terms of 2 days, I guess I'll actually be back here on Thursday night for the show.
Good thing you mentioned it. Folks, make sure you listen to that one.
Yes, the cleanup hour, Friday night at midnight. Okay. I'll be back here for that. So that'll be 2 days from now. 2 weeks from now, what I will probably be doing is I'm hoping by this point, maybe having my dissertation proposal more finalized, ready to start putting that committee together, get all of the footnote or all the citations in it, which means it'll go from about 20 pages to a good 60 pages at the moment. 2 months from now, I hope to actually be working on the research in and of itself. So between writing my theoretical framework and conducting the interviews that I need for the data for the latter part of the dissertation, I hope I will be at that point. I'm trying to move a little bit further ahead as possible, try to keep things going a little bit early. And then 2 years from now, I believe around this time, I should be getting prepped to do my dissertation defense.
All right.
And then I will finish my PhD, and then I have to figure my life out from there. So that'll be kind of where I'm at 2 years from now, is finishing off a big part of my life and then trying to figure out where to go from there.
Next steps. And 20 years, depending on climate.
Yeah, depending on climate, that's kind of how I put it, is we'll see where things are in 10 years from now, and then I'll make the 20-year judgment from there. Yeah, because certainly the climate change stuff has one thinking about the future in rather negative terms, I fear.
It does look kind of weird. I can only recall once in my life that kind of – we had what was called the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yep.
And, you know, the nuclear weapons, and still exists, but somehow it's mutual assured destruction. The logic of that is probably made a nuclear attack unlikely, but we still have the capacity to decimate the planet if we wanted to.
Yeah, I'll say this is a political science student.
Somehow we managed, it hasn't happened, probably won't, but touch wood, it's like, do we have to look at the precipice of climate change before we'll finally...
Yeah, and I mean, I say this as a political science student. In terms of nuclear weapons, you had a few more individuals in direct charge there. And, you know, you had the president who will make a decision in states and, you know, leaders of other countries who have to think about multiple interests, but a lot of power rests with them. Climate change is a hyper problem to the point where any one individual's decisions might not necessarily, again, if you have a president who's more likely to lead on climate change, all the better, but it requires so much more in that. And that's where kind of, I think, more the existential dread stems from for people in my generation, just folks in general, because right. unlike the Cuban Missile Crisis, where you could at least typically point to a few individuals and institutions, here we point at each other, we point at ourselves, we point at big companies, you point at governments that are failing, international institutions that are failing. You can point at just about everyone, and that becomes a very complicated problem. If you're pointing everywhere, you know, what do you do from there, though, once the pointing is stopped and you eventually say, all right, we can't keep doing that anymore. But again, the discourse, some of these things that we're still saying and some of the ways people are still talking about it are how we were talking about it when Al Gore put out The Inconvenient Truth. So it's, I think, too, that adds to the dread as well. And what makes it so different from the Cuban Missile Crisis is that we just see a much different, a much larger and wider set of actors involved, and no one who we can really very clearly say, you have the power to make sure that we don't hit this kind of catastrophe point.
Yeah, no, that's very true. It's an existential crisis, but a different kind of beast for sure.
Exactly.
Well, Richard, I've just had so much fun. I'm so glad you came in to
visit us today. Thank you for having me on.
And good luck with your show. And
thank you.
A little promo you did for us there, and we're gonna come back in 6 days and 22 hours, and I hope you'll join us here at the Agriculture Show. Don't forget to listen to Richard's show Friday nights. Well, I guess it's Saturday morning, actually.
No, Friday morning. Thursday nights.
Thursday nights, Friday mornings.
Yep.
And with that, have a great week. We'll see you in 6 days and 22 hours. And if you eat this week, thank a farmer. And if you're a farmer, thank a consumer.
Apt words to kind of send us off.
And play that last song, and we'll see you next week. Go
there
ahead.
There we go.
All right.
Arigato imato nareba mikushimi mo okorasete kurete arigato nani mo kamo natsukashi. Yeah.